Linoleum knife.
Happy 2016, everyone. It's our first show of the new year.
It's not happy yet.
Well, I'm wishing them happiness in a future that hasn't occurred yet. Fine. In a landscape devastated by the apocalypse.
Fine. Are you prepared for the electromagnetic attack?
By whom?
I don't know. Do you? I've just been thinking about the go bag.
Oh, God.
I've been thinking about the go bag all day. when we have an electromagnetic pulse.
Oh God, are you watching Doomsday Preppers again? Is
no.
that what this is? Okay.
No. Loretta and Bodhi were talking about their emergency preparedness
oh, right,
kit.
That's true.
And then like, how, I'm sorry, this is a Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
It is indeed.
My name is Dave White. This is Alonzo Duralde.
Hi.
We have a guest.
We do. We're thrilled to have with us today. He's been on the show before, and we always adore having him here. An editor at HitFix, our dear friend, Louis Vertel.
Oh, hello. I loved watching you conduct during the opening theme. I was like, oh, Arturo's here.
I don't know what you were doing.
It was that ding, 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 ding. Yeah, I just, you know, I was just imagining somebody hitting those, you know.
I thought you were waving at me, trying to get my attention.
No.
Okay, so no, the thing.
The go bag. What
the
is
the go bag? It's all I can think
this
about.
This is how you ring in the new year, with thoughts of doom.
It's
this
all,
is so
it's
you,
all
Dave
I can
White.
Think about.
We only have dystopian New Year's now.
Well, we had an emergency preparedness kit.
Yes. Which I know was super gay of me, but I nicknamed it the Eartha Kit.
Because
it was short for Earthquake Preparedness Kit, you know.
Oh my God, that's really great.
Anyway.
I need bottled water.
We had the bottled water. With the bottled water. Bottled water expires.
Yeah, who knew?
Wow.
There's a date on those bottles.
So now I'm scared of the bottled water, and I don't know what to do with it. I'm putting it in the trunk of the car in case we need water in the car for...
Overheating.
Whatever it
is. The car,
might
not
need.
Us.
And then there were boxes. There's little... The Steripak, you know, the boxes of soup.
Right.
And a bunch of those. They were fixing to expire. It became
bet,
like box of soup lunch every day for
yeah.
a week.
I bet the canned soup lasts longer. You know, the box, like when you go to Whole Foods and like it's
oh,
the
sure.
mushroom yeah. puree, blah, blah, you know, it's in the box.
Right.
Because you know, mm-hmm. it's more enviro-friendly or whatever, but I'm sure also has less of a shelf life in the years of doom.
Anyway, now we don't have any food in the earthquake kit because it all expired. Well, we ate it before it expired.
Right, and the water's old.
So I'm like, I'm at the store and I'm thinking, okay, I need to start rebuying
it's got
food.
Extra hydrogen in it now or something.
Rebuying food for the earthquake kit. But then I learn about the go bag, and we don't have go bags.
I did not know about the go bag, frankly.
You're supposed to have so much stuff in the go bag.
It's like when your wife is pregnant, you have to have that bag that's ready to go, you know, to run to the hospital. But instead of pregnancy, it's for apocalypse.
I see.
You need to have a flashlight. You need to have some fire. Like,
matches.
Stuff to make a fire.
Right.
A bag of fire.
You need to have some tools.
What? Like what?
Duct tape.
Like more than a Swiss Army knife?
Like
an
actual time,
hammer?
When it's time to rig the abandoned vehicle... That you found to make it go, you'll need tools to make the sparks happen.
We can't outrun zombies, and we definitely can't make a car work. So let's just. I think cyanide would be the thing for us to hang on to in the go bag.
I just want to say that I'm really excited now for the kind of dystopian movie that is in like a. It happens to like a Rachel Getting Married type family where expired bottled water is part of the disaster situation. And Anne's weeping.
I thought you were checking the dates.
Yeah. Anyway, this has been my main concern all day. I've been online looking for backpacks. Like, I have a backpack, but we need one for you. Like, we both need our
we each
own.
Need a go bag.
Go bags. Do you know how much backpacks cost now?
They're really expensive.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
This is stupid.
Well, I don't want one.
Only
with,
rich
like,
people can have go
I don't,
bags.
I don't want with one with Dora the Explorer on
it. That's what you're getting.
No.
Because that's what's on sale at Target. That's the one you're. I'll carry the Dora.
Could I at least have Ultimate Spider-Man?
And I'll carry the Dora. You can have the black one that we have.
Okay.
Even though Black is my color.
Yes, we know.
It's I don't.
You wear black.
You should have.
Blah, 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 blah.
You wouldn't custom make your go bag? Like, you wouldn't have, like, I would have, like, Charlotte Rampling on mine or something.
Like, those t-shirts. That Lewis was wears like a week, lot of those.
There was, like, a week on the internet where you were modeling a new t-shirt every day.
Right, there's this app where you can custom design t-shirts, and then they stopped doing this because they realized all my images were copyrighted.
Oh, yes.
But I got 11 out of them.
Nice.
Yes.
And, yeah, you were doing deep cuts. Like, you were doing, like, tall story era Jane Fonda kind
Duh.
Of material. You yeah. know, it was, they were amazing.
During the era when Jane looked indistinguishable from Anne Margaret because they wanted her to be Anne Margaret.
Oh, yeah. God, I never thought about that. Yeah. Right. It was totally, but early.
That was a thing. Did you... You posted the Anne Margaret.
Oh, that Canada Dry commercial. Did you see that?
Right? No.
Oh.
And I'm me.
Oh, Lewis, I'm going to send this to you directly.
Oh man,
it's Anne Margaret. It's like a 2 minute commercial. It goes on. It's basically remember that episode of Mad Men where they wanted the patio commercial to look like Anne Margaret,
right? The Bye Bye Birdie. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the actual ad that they made, which is Anne Margaret and all these like chorus girls behind her, and she's talking about how she's a soda expert and how she's like Canada Dry, and it's
and she's like bobbling and.
Oh, yeah. It is as Anne Margaret as you can get.
I need to make it something very clear.
What?
Please do not send us backpacks.
Not even like a Tumi? Like you wouldn't take like a $500 one?
Okay.
It's tough.
No backpacks, please. No. No backpacks.
We love you people, and you've occasionally surprised us with things like Butter Rum Lifesavers.
Somebody sent us a box of Butter Rum Lifesavers. Like, not a box, a case. Yeah. Somebody sent us
a box.
That was a person that we identified.
Yes. We have a box fan that we still don't know who sent
us. Somebody
sent
us a box fan at the end of the summer, anonymously. We just anonymously got a compact disc of a band this week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know the band. There's no name of who sent it. A Portland record store or label is the one who sent it, and we don't know.
It was ordered via Amazon, but no more.
We love the gifts.
It's very sweet of you.
No more gifts.
Channel that generosity to the subscriptions that will be happening very, very soon.
Yeah,
and I know we've been saying that for months, but this time really.
This
very
time we
soon.
Mean it, and no backpacks.
But thank you for the thought. You were thinking it. Thank you. But no
cases of
emergency water.
I'll take a backpack for the record. I just want to say that.
Now, Dave, do you also need emergency diamond water for when the apocalypse happens?
I do.
You know about this?
It sounds like something like you put like a sprinkle of something in and okay. Tilda Swinton pops
out. I'm going to explain it to you. The greatest television show on the air, Shaws of Sunset.
Didn't expect that. Okay.
One of my TV friends who's on that show,
the gay guy.
No,
oh.
Asa.
Asa.
Yeah, they're all my TV friends. I don't know any of them, but they're all my friends.
Oh, I see.
Dave did once yell at the gay guy. Out of
I
a
did
car
yell at
a movie, window
did,
of a moving
I
car.
I did though. Yell at Reza outside a moving car one day because just he was crossing the street. And I was just saying, hey.
Yeah, imagine not yelling at him.
He's my TV friend. It was my job to yell at him and say, hey, TV friend.
Anyway.
Asa is an entrepreneur, and she created diamond water. Bottled water in a faceted plastic bottle with a big, huge, heavy, clunky, fake plastic diamond as a cap.
Oh, yes.
And it's filtered through diamonds that she selects.
It is imbued.
For their energy powers that will heal you.
In a diamond way.
The diamonds will...
Well, they are forever.
It's delicious water.
They've got two cases of this for
not,
his birthday.
An anonymous person did not
no,
do this.
A friend of ours.
A ridiculous friend of mine bought me a case of diamond water for my birthday.
Two.
And now you are resplendent.
Sorry, two cases.
Oh, we could totally tell the difference once he started drinking.
What? Yeah. My pH was like amazing.
24 karat pH.
When it was over. Yeah.
His fingernails could suddenly scratch steel.
Yeah. I'm going to need some diamond water in my go bag.
For the emergency.
At Aldi, you can get corundum water. It's not the same thing.
So before we get to this week, we're talking about a couple of new movies, but the worst films of 2014, which I knew that Lewis would be the person to 2015.
What are we going
to
do first? The worsts or the new?
First, I need to mention that Linoleum Knife is brought to you by.
See, it's in my notes.
Okay, good. I was going to get to that. Linoleum Knife is brought to you by Reed Martin's independent film guide, The Real Truth, available on paperback from Amazon or as an ebook. From iTunes.
How many more of these spots are we...
I have to sit down and count how many we've done. I don't know.
I can't... First of all, I can't remember how many he paid for.
I have it written down.
And I can't remember how many we said we were going to do.
I'll figure that
out. Let's just keep doing them until he tells us to stop.
That's not a great incentive.
Hey Reed Martin. We trust you. When you think we've accomplished the number, because we both lost
this
count...
This is why we're never making any money on this show. We're just going to advertise until we stop.
Like, Reed Martin owns you, technically. You've decided. Because it's easier.
We give ourselves over. All right. Let's do the new movies real quick. And then and then we can dig into the stinkeroonies of the last year. The one...
I like that word.
Thank you. The one new movie that opened this week in New York and Los Angeles is one of my favorite films of the year. And that would be...
Do you need me to say the name?
I'm blanking on the name. Sorry, Charlie Kaufman and Duke Johnson's Anomalisa.
Yes.
Which I was lucky enough to see back in Venice, and Dave saw this morning at 8:30 at the Arclight. Who was anyone there?
There were four other people. Mm. Which, see, now the new year has begun, and I'm assuming that probably maybe this week will be the end of them and the Grove. Starting screenings at like 8 o'clock in the morning,
right?
Which,
and that saddens you.
And during the Star Wars first 2 weekends of Star Wars, they were starting screenings at 7.
Oh, please, there
of just
five,
everything.
5:30. Oh, you mean yeah, right.
Of everything? No, Star
they were
Wars.
Star Wars around the
around
clock.
The clock, yeah. But everything else was like, well, we're open. We might as well start everything at around 7 a.m. And they did. And you know, as we were discussing on off the mic before the show started, I get up super crazy early, just of my own volition, and.
And you went to a packed house of
once
April 8
had
at
my,
7 a.m. or whatever.
Yeah, once I've had my cornflakes and a cup of tea.
You're ready to go.
I'm ready to go see a movie.
I would love to go to morning screenings more often.
Yeah.
I love it.
So I saw Hateful Eight at 8 o'clock in the morning. I saw Star Wars that early. I saw Joy that early. I saw today Anomalisa and The Revenant.
Right. Which were we
I saw
about?
Them all that early because I didn't get to any press screenings during December. I just had to catch up and buy tickets. And boy, it was delightful to go at 8 o'clock in the morning to see movies. So there were four other people today. Right, Hateful Eight was sold out,
which is
bizarre.
Your screening notwithstanding, apparently Anomalisa is doing pretty well in its limited release, and it's supposed to be going wider later. It's obviously going to be a big player in the Oscars, at least in the best animated film category. So it will be getting around and about. It's apparently started as a radio play that Kaufman and I think Carter Burwell kind of conceived together, and then... He figured out this was a way to turn it into a movie, which was by turning it into a stop-motion animated film.
Yeah.
Which somebody on Twitter was asking me if it was, you know, if I thought it was gimmicky or they couldn't have just done it as a live action. I'm like, no, I think the way it's set up, you kind of have to do it this way.
You don't have to do it this way.
I think if you didn't, you would have an entire movie that looked like that one scene in Being John Malkovich where John Malkovich goes into his own head and sees all the other Malkoviches.
Right.
I do like that, though.
That's a cool part.
That might get a little weird for 90 minutes.
Hateful Eight takes place in one room
for almost
3 hours.
Anyway, I think it works really well as a stop-motion animated film. David Thewlis plays a sort of like motivational speaker, business, you know, expert type. Customer service expert. Right. Who's going to Cincinnati.
How may I help you help them is the name of his book.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's going to Cincinnati to deliver a lecture, and you come to understand quickly that to him the world is sort of this overwhelmingly samey place in terms of, you know, he's in a rut in his marriage. He visits with an ex-girlfriend, and you know that's not what he expects it to be.
And he's a terrible person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
that's
very
clear.
Let's make that clear, too. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, the movie in no way is trying to excuse his behavior or endorse his point of view.
Wants to abandon his wife and child partly because of the child.
So like the Philip Seymour Hoffman character in Synecdoche, New York, which Kaufman previously directed, you know, is someone who's interesting and you are brought into his head, but in no way is the movie trying to say, like, you're right about things, you know.
Right.
Or we all relate to you or whatever.
Exactly, yeah. Like, right. You know, I see where you're coming from. No, it's, I mean, they may see where he's coming from, but the movie's also telling him he should knock it off. Not necessarily, but it's...
I wouldn't go that far.
It's not presenting it as an ideal situation or as, you know...
Right.
It's not supporting it.
Keep talking about the plot.
Okay, so he comes across a woman staying in the hotel who is there for the lecture, named Lisa, and she is the only other character in the film who is not voiced by Tom Noonan, and it's voiced by Jennifer Jason Leigh. And he immediately sort of feels this connection to her because she seems different. She seems to stand out. She seems to be the anomaly in a world where everything is and everyone is the same.
Even the female characters are voiced by Tom Noonan.
Yeah.
That's something that we need to make clear. And it's never explained.
No.
And in the first 10 minutes, you're thinking, wait, who is talking and why does he sound the same? And then you realize what's going on.
And also, you're thinking like, you know, I found myself thinking about just the effort that goes into making an animated film, especially a stop motion animated film, and that they're applying all this to a movie that's about a guy flying to Cincinnati and staying in a hotel.
Yes.
I'm like, what?
Yeah. Right.
But it all makes sense after a while.
Yes.
You know, and that's what's so great about it, or one of the things that's so great about it.
Now, can I ask you something?
Please.
Now, you are... I know this more as a you quality than as a Dave quality, but I think you're in this world. Don't care about the Oscars. Or, like, you don't care about the pomp of it, etc.
No.
Are you at all swept up in JJL Oscar fever? Jennifer Jason Leigh, like, rising to the throne?
My thing with the Oscars is
That would be... dope.
I don't generally trust their judgment, and so it's not like the award usually doesn't carry a lot of weight for the film that it's given to, but I get that it's a big deal for actors and that it can do things for them.
Sure.
And so she certainly falls in the category of somebody who I think has done a lot of great work that people didn't notice or weren't interested in or didn't respond to. So if it takes...
She gets ignored.
Right. So if it takes getting punched in the face for 3 hours Oscars go, oh yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh, we've always liked you. Great, you know, and if that gets her someplace, great. Although I don't know that the supporting actress Oscars necessarily. I don't know.
It's my favorite category, but I see what you're saying.
I know it is, but I don't know that it can hold a door open, much less open one. You know,
not the Mercedes Rule Award. Exactly. What are you talking about?
I know. I mean, like when Diane Wiest was complaining about how she was basically like living from paycheck to paycheck, it was like, okay, you have two of these. This is not good. The thing is, I did a piece for The Wrap where I talked about, you know, here's some stuff that if you're an Oscar voter, maybe don't ignore this year. That it might be slipping under your radar. And I mentioned David Thewlis for this film because, as you know, the Academy has never, ever honored a voice actor, even with a nomination. Even when, like, Disney was doing
Robin
a push
Williams and all that stuff.
Yeah, or Ellen DeGeneres for Finding Nemo. They did a genuine campaign for her. Right. Nothing. Nobody ever goes for it. Even though that's... you're acting your face off in those things. If you're doing it well, you know, you have to capture so much that's in the vocal qualities. And all three actors in this movie are great, but I think Thewlis especially, because he's in every single scene, is great. And I would love to see him get attention. If JJL gets some action, obviously it's going to be for the Tarantino movie, not for this one, but it will reflect on the fact that it's that thing where, like I've always said, that the only reason that Whoopi Goldberg got an Oscar for Ghost, which everyone saw, is because she was so amazing.
The Color Purple. Yeah.
No, The Long Walk Home, which nobody saw the same year.
Wow, I just clutched my heart.
No, I love that movie, and nobody saw it. And that, to me, is that even more than Color Purple. When I think of like the best Whoopi Goldberg performance, I go to Long Walk Home.
Mm-hmm.
They nominated Dennis Hopper for Hoosiers instead of Blue Velvet.
Right,
there's always that other movie that's kind of lifting the boat, and then they go for the obvious.
Yeah,
boat,
like the Jim Broadbent or whatever he got, Iris, right? And then, it was up Moulin for Rouge. Something else. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Should have got.
Yeah. So that's this will be the movie that kind of boosts Hateful Eight in terms of making it the year of, oh yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh, you're a thing that happens.
Mm-hmm. You've been around forever.
Exactly.
And we don't love you enough.
Right.
Wish Mrs. Parker in the Vicious Circle was better, but she was good.
I love that movie, but I know it's not for everybody. I've always wanted to hear her original version of Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, right. Because
legend is that she had to go in and loop her entire performance because her first go round was so like 1930s that no one could understand what she was saying.
Oh my god.
Yeah. She had to, like, what you're seeing in the movie now is the toned down version.
Yeah. Oh my god. It would be like some Harvard Lampoon sketch or something.
So I don't know if this is true, but if it is, I would love to hear her. I'd love to hear the unfiltered, you know, Jennifer Jason Leigh on that one. Anyway, yeah, Anomalisa, I was just blown away by it. I thought it was beautiful to look at, and it's so well written, and it had surprises, and took me places I wasn't expecting to go. And I kind of agree with Amy Nicholson, where she said that she loved Synecdoche, New York so much she almost didn't want Kaufman to ever direct again.
Right.
Lest, you know, that he somehow mar his perfect record. You know, you want it to be like Charles Laughton and Night of the Hunters. Like, okay, done. Yeah, you don't need to make anything else ever. But this one is right up there with Synecdoche in terms of just getting me in the gut.
That's amazing. I mean, and unexpected.
Yeah.
Without discussing it, I found the ending completely surprising. And I'm wondering, more than just, you know, that comment on the ending, I loved this.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it because he occupies a territory that other directors I really admire live in as well. People like Todd Solondz, Harmony Korine, in a mainstream way, the Coens, where by accentuating human strangeness, they dare to come off as jerks. Because
we're conditioned to think that if you're the protagonist of the film is a walking endorsement of the filmmaker's point of view or way of life,
not simply the protagonist, but all the characters.
Sure.
When you don't know if you're supposed to pity them,
like them,
if you don't know you're supposed to like them or dislike them, pity them, or empathize with them,
right?
If you don't know if the film is condescending to them or not.
Yeah.
I love that kind of tension. Because I think really what it means is that the answer is yes. That everything is a mixed bag. That every day in life, there's that moment where you're thinking, oh, I feel sorry for that really ugly, stupid, boring person. Okay.
Right.
So you're at part of you is sort of maybe aesthetically judging them based on their choices, their whatever they lack that you find bothersome, you know, or whatever they don't lack that you find bothersome. And while at the same time they're pushing your, well, we are all human beings here, after all, so let's be nice to each other.
Right.
In any case.
Sometimes you're the entomologist, and sometimes you're the fly swatter.
Yeah, and so, I'd say the most extreme example of this, and you and I have had many, 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 many arguments over the years about Todd Solondz.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
And, well, Harmony Korine as well, but Harmony Korine is more, what's the word? I don't want to say fanciful, but much
overt.
More aesthetically sort of removed in a, you know. But Todd Solondz goes right for the ugliest thing.
Right.
The most hateful thing. And says to you, well, you're just like him. And so am I. We're all dicks. And we're all ruined. And isn't it sad? And now maybe you're going to cry over this person who you cannot stand. And you realize that they are really creepy and weird and gross and terrible or hateful or, you know, rude or, you know, haughty or whatever. And at the same time, you're feeling for them. And that's a really tough line to walk. And I think a film like this does that even more than Synecdoche. Synecdoche for me was this great sort of emotional experience mm-hmm. where there weren't really bad people. There were just lost people. And in this film, there are bores and jerks. And that's kind of it. And that's tough.
It's hard to say, though, because we are seeing this world so... I mean, I can't think of another film in which we are more immersed into one person's point of view. And I don't mean in a literal sense like, you know, Lady in the Lake or something where the camera is the character. But I mean in terms of our perception of people and events as filtered through one person's consciousness. So maybe they aren't all bores and jerks, but that's how he sees the right, world.
Yeah. If I met all of these people in the world, I would forget all of them except three.
But again, you've only seen them through his eyes. You don't know what they would like, what they'd look like through yours.
They're still behaving that way. and because they are, in certain circumstances, I'm agreeing with him. And at the same time, I'm looking at him and going, and you're awful. Like, you're a really bad guy.
True.
And so, you know, there is, when I run into someone who's like, you know, oh, I just love that, whatever it is, some really, really tedious thing, mm-hmm. and it's their favorite thing, you know, I just think...
So everybody on the internet? Okay.
Pretty much. And my first thought is, man, we're probably not going to be friends.
Right.
You know, and...
Duh.
And, yeah, but I don't... say it.
Right.
And so I'm...
And therein lies the difference.
Yeah, and so at the same time, over time, I might find myself becoming friends with that person.
Sure.
I may find myself finding other things about them that I like or that I think are not aesthetically, you know, sort of repellent. Mm-hmm. And then I have to reevaluate. Right. And so... watching a film like this and watching these people is an uncomfortable experience, but I think, you know, it mirrors real life.
Yeah, and like the fundamentals of meeting and knowing people or resenting people or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, and I see what you're saying. What's the Salons movie that we had the art disagreement about?
All of them?
No.
Dark Horse?
Some of the Dark Horse.
Dark Horse,
that was the one.
Which I feel is just heartbreakingly sad.
Yeah, see, I get what you're saying, and I understand your view of that one. I don't think Salons is as good at this as Kaufman is in terms of letting us through that process. And if
Salons is less weird, he's more direct.
Maybe, but in the way that Salons does it, it's hard. I can't distinguish... You know, and maybe that's my failing, but I can't tell when he's not
good,
you know, being just flat out condescending.
Good.
You know, and I don't know. Maybe that's
good.
Maybe that's on me. But I think this is a much better example of that. Anyway, so Anomalies is great. You should go see it. And then we put off talking about The Revenant so that you could go. And when you came home, that was joy. You said you weren't sure yet what you thought, but no, Revenant.
Revenant.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how I'm going to sound during his Oscar speech.
for 2.5 hours.
Boom hour. From King of the Hill. That's everybody.
The Hillbilly Bears.
I want the Revenant people to meet the Big Short people and have a conversation.
Because you didn't understand anything.
Did we talk about the Big Short yet?
I did, but we're going to talk about what you thought of it. Because now that you've seen it. Anyway, so the Revenant. Now, before, you liked Birdman, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was good.
It was fine. It was good.
But up to Birdman, we both kind of hated Gonzalez Inarritu.
With the exception of the Rinko Kikuchi sequence of Babel, I don't give one damn about
She's like
his,
literally the only thing I remember about that 11-hour thing.
Yeah.
So, so he's back to his old tricks after fooling us for one movie.
When I was a younger man and I saw Amores Perros,
yeah,
I was like, wow, that's something.
Uh-huh.
And then either he fell off a cliff or I did.
21 Grams, yeah. Beautiful.
Oh, God.
21 Grams was horrible.
Oh, it was the worst.
Have you seen Beautiful?
No, oh, I like that guy,
even
though.
Worse. Yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's unbearable. Unbearable should have been the title. I remember 21 Grams when they came out. Jeffrey Wells, of all people, once made a comment about...
Oh, my bro!
Yeah, exactly. Who said that The Revenant is for men only.
Let me tell you, my screening at 8:30 in the morning...
was men only.
Sausage party.
Yeah.
It was in one of the little houses at the Arclight.
Uh-huh.
There were maybe 30 people in the screening. Because that is 8:15 in the morning for The Revenant is... Yeah, you're asking...
That's intense.
You're asking for a woman in the screening.
Anyway, he once made a comment about... Talking about people like Nancy Myers and people who make sort of upscale movies that he referred to as copper pot movies. You know, they've always got those copper pots in their kitchen they never use. They just hang there.
Love
you know?
It, yeah.
And then I remember when I watched 21 Grams, I thought, okay, this is the exact opposite. This is what I call the greasy parka movie.
Right.
It was like, let us just cram your face into as much human degradation as we can find and call it art, you know?
Right.
And so this movie... based on a true story, it's about, you know, set in the American frontier where this guy was mauled by a bear, all but left for dead, but didn't die and came crawling back to civilization mainly to get revenge on the jerk who left him there and killed his son. And I think this would have been an amazing 105-minute movie, but at 2.5 hours, I wanted to slit my throat.
Has anybody played more prestige two-dimensional characters than Leonardo DiCaprio? I mean, literally, I always say, like, once every 2 years, Martin Scorsese calls up Leonardo DiCaprio and says, it's another creep with a temper, take it or leave it. It's like, that's why he doesn't win. It's like, there's nothing about him that has, like... a surprise turn, besides with the notable exception of Django Unchained, in which I thought he was probably the best thing in that.
He was really good in that, yeah. But Drew, he even sort of reduced Jay Gatsby to about three
I know,
choices.
That movie sucked.
I loved Wolf of Wall Street.
It was good.
And I liked him in it.
The Quaalude sequence was an inspired piece of physical comedy. Yeah. I will give him that.
Yeah.
Like, after that, I thought Leonardo DiCaprio is our new Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish he would follow that path.
I know.
A little bit.
But he's going to continue playing more mean people on the spectrum. So get ready.
I thought this film was incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, well, it's shot by, Emmanuel Lubezki.
And
with all natural light sources, apparently.
Yeah, just gorgeous. See it on a big screen.
Yeah, if you're gonna put yourself through it, at least watch it on the big screen.
Find a place with comfy seats.
Mm.
And I did like this. I think it's really... an impressive achievement of an impressive physical object, because the amount of just like in Hateful Eight, there were moments when the stuff was happening outside in Hateful Eight is what I mean to say.
Both minutes of that.
Yeah. there were times while watching this film that I thought, how are they doing this? How is this happening? Like, how are they, is there something digital going on that I can't see, you know, like...
The bear mauling scene is...
Well, the bear is
extraordinary.
The bear is digital, and that there's a flash of a second where you can feel that, can see it.
I did not have that flash. I was just like, the whole time.
Well, it's when you see the bear's face.
Oh, okay.
Because they never can quite get anything's face.
Hmm.
Right.
And... so, I shouldn't say never, but often that's if you're gonna
the eyes. Is
if there's a cheat, if there's a tell, it's always gonna be the face.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I get the whole thing of, well, did that bear have sex with him? Like,
it was a lady bear.
I couldn't tell.
She was protecting her cubs.
I understand
that. I was happy to see that broken down in, like, GIF form, though, because it is pretty confusing.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a couple moments where you're like, okay, well, she is mounting him from behind. And you don't know if it's female bear or not. Watching it, you know, it's not like she's...
That seemed to be the...
It's not like she's carrying context. A person wearing a fur coat.
The bear turns to the screen and says, I'm about to pass the Bechdel test. That's how you know.
Yeah. She'd have a string of pearls on. And big eyelashes, right. Like bears do in cartoons, you know.
And so, I guess she is wearing a fur coat, but still, that sequence is I can see the confusion, first of all. I thought Leonardo DiCaprio delivered this great physical performance because that's what it is. This is the sequence in Wolf of Wall Street, the falling down the stairs sequence, where he's simply falling down all of nature.
Waterfalls.
Like for 2.5 hours. There's like the horse over the cliff, and then the waterfall, and then the... How a human body can survive one of the 17
calamities,
horrifying things.
It's like a human tumbling through the Escher painting, like the endless staircase.
Well, no, it's like, did you ever see Hot Rod?
No.
The Andy Samberg movie? There's a scene where...
It's terrific.
It's very funny. It's very underrated. It's, all the Lonely Planet people worked on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or Lonely Island.
Lonely people. Island. Yeah. I always say that. Lonely Island people. Anyway, there's a scene where he's reenacting the angry dance number from Footloose.
Oh, yeah.
But instead of in a warehouse, he's in the woods. And at one point, he, like, trips and goes down a hill and goes down a hill and goes down a hill and goes down a hill. And it just keeps going. And it gets funnier and funnier in this weird Andy Kaufman sort of way. And that's kind of what DiCaprio has to do here.
I think that Tom Hardy didn't quite have a lot to do in the film, except just be sort of
Snidely Whiplash,
the guy who's bad, mean to Leo and a murderer.
No,
and all
look,
that stuff.
It's beautifully constructed, and there's a lot going on that's interesting to look at. And DiCaprio is certainly, you're right, physically acting the crap out of this thing. But in terms of the pacing of it, I was really into it, and then I was less into it, and then at one point I was like, all right, die or don't die, but do something and let's end this thing.
It does move. Slowly.
And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point it just felt organically longer than it needed to be.
And when a film moves that slowly and yet is pummeling you constantly, you get tired.
Mm.
And there was a moment when, because I had had a big cup of tea, I did have to get up and go to the bathroom. And
Which I endorsed during this movie.
It was the morning. I'd had a big thing of tea. I had to get up and go to the bathroom. And I looked at my phone on the way to the restroom. And I was like, oh, this movie's only been on for 1 hour and 10 minutes. Like, there's still another 1 hour and 15 to go. Like, what else can happen to him? And then you find out what else can happen to him.
Plenty.
Yeah. It is. It's pretty grueling. But I thought it was pretty great. And I'm not qualifying that. I think it's gorgeous to look at.
I like the pieces, but not the whole.
It may not be as meaningful as I would hope.
Uh-huh.
But if Birdman and this are where he wants to go, in Yari 2, I mean, fine. Like,
well, yeah, it's better than Beautiful, granted. Yeah. But I don't know. This just felt like. Too much, and I liked all the things in it, but I just thought we could have done with much less of it, and it would have had a more impact when it was over.
And women, please do go see it and just
prove Jeffrey Wells wrong.
Prove that crazy, like, skeleton person wrong.
Nice.
Why should I be nice? He's a bizarre human being.
I will say though about
I'm not libeling him. I'm not saying that he did something horrible or is bad. I just think he's repellent. He is.
I'm sure he loves that about himself.
I'm not the only person to say that out loud.
I know. I just...
He's gross.
The weird thing about Birdman, though, is like I really thought that movie was all about the performances. So I'm like sad to see him go away from like on the ensembliness. I thought that was what was most impressive about that, even though it was a big technical achievement.
No, true, and certainly not a ton of dialogue either. I mean,
yeah,
like,
right.
This is one of those scripts I'm sure that was like the script for All Is Lost, where it was just like you know action and you know event happening. No, I don't hate this movie. It is absolutely worth seeing on the big screen, if only for the cinematography. I just think it overstays its welcome. Now I'm dying to hear what you thought of Joy, because I had big problems with that movie. And when you got home and I asked you about it and you said you didn't know what you thought.
I thought the same thing. I felt the same way when I originally saw it.
I think maybe there should have been a different script and a different way of editing and directing.
Yeah.
That does strike me as most of the movie. Okay, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But something I noticed after I saw the film.
Mm-hmm.
I came home and I was watching Born This Way, which we will talk about on LKTV more this week. It's a reality show about seven people with Down syndrome.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there was an ad for Joy on the show. And the TV spot is cut like this. And each this is Jennifer Lawrence looking beguiling. Like, there is this, she's giving... Every beat of that TV spot is her giving one of those amazing faces that she can do. And each one of them is like a little, like, hostess fruit pie that you want to grab and enjoy, because she is capable of delivering so much immense pleasure. She is... my current favorite movie star because she knows how to, whether she means to or not, sometimes I think she's just playing herself in everything she does.
Many of the great movie stars did.
Whether this is technique or she's just naturally this incredibly charismatic, she knows how to serve up a face on camera. And 15 minutes into this movie, once again, I was like, I'm in love with you. You're so great. Anything you do is going to be great. You're going to succeed. And even if you fail during the movie, I'm going to just keep hoping and rooting for you. And then, of course, I know the ending because Joy Mangano.
Whose last name is never mentioned in the
movie. Right, nor is the Miracle Mop. The name of the mop is never mentioned. Yeah. They just say a mop.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
She's a billionaire now. But she honestly made me feel like I was watching a Lady Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life. Like, that's how enchanting she is.
Mm-hmm.
So this messy movie, I don't care how messy it is, I think she's terrific. And I want to watch her do anything. And David O. Russell...
So as a delivery device for Jennifer Lawrence, basically.
David O. Russell is clearly captivated by her and just wants to keep on pointing his camera at her.
Yeah.
Like, she is his Anna Karina. And that's what she should be for a while, I guess. And some of the movies are going to be good, and some of them are going to be this. And you're still going to watch it and go, isn't she great?
See, I felt like that movie didn't tell you anything you already didn't... I felt like we already knew all of this about Jennifer Lawrence before. Like, oh, she does play a scrappy character, and she will have that precious moments face. And, like... But it's like... Every problem she encounters is so momentary. It's like the thrill of the movie is like, isn't it fun to see her get over that small hurdle?
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the thing that bugged me the most. Here you have a woman who is so driven and so dedicated to like making stuff happen and to improve her life. She hits a setback that is so terrible that she actually tells her child to like give up on her dream, forget it, never try anything.
Literally, by the way.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. This is an actual speech she gives.
Yeah.
Then she cuts her hair and fixes everything.
Right.
That's ugh. A spoiler.
And also, I'm not over the whole, like, can we get, like, a 35-year-old, 40-year-old to play this? It's like this weird condescending, like, oh, we are interested in difficult roles for ladies if they're played by someone who was born in the 90s who has the face of a 14-year-old. I mean, is she going to play, like, Dame May Whitty next?
Five people listening love that joke. It's absolutely true. I somebody was saying that, I've appropriated this, that in American Hustle, she was too young for that character, but she acted the crap out of it, and you just forgot about it.
Right,
and you
right.
went with it. And this one, she's still acting the crap out of it, but you're like, at the beginning of the movie, we're supposed to feel like you've had life drained out of you by this, like, go-nowhere marriage and these two children and this family that needy. You still look like Jennifer Lawrence,
right.
and people say, oh, well, that's what Joy Mangano looked like, and you see her on her first QVC appearance, she was all youthful and da-da-da, I'm like, maybe, but that doesn't translate visually into a movie, into buying into a character.
She is too young, the film has a lot of problems, it's...
I think it's a comfort film more than an actual drama, which is what they're presenting it as.
Yeah. There are moments that make you feel good, but it's weird, like, I mean...
I do love that it's a movie about a woman who invents a mob.
Right. No, I understand that.
But, I would have loved if it had become a movie about the early days of QVC, because that whole segment is fascinating. And then we totally drop Bradley Cooper as a character after spending, 20 minutes establishing him as somebody who matters in this story.
I liked the cameos. Melissa Rivers as Joan.
Aren't you so happy we figured out something to do with Melissa Rivers?
Yes. Susan Lucci.
Susan is so good.
Donna Mills.
Yes, fake soap opera stuff was great to watch. I went in excited to see this because I
watched Diane Ladd go anywhere and do anything.
Yep. The narration got on my nerves, even though it was Diane Ladd.
I want Jennifer Lawrence to grow up to be Diane Ladd.
I had good faith going into this thing, and I was liking it for a while, and then at some point I thought, you can just tell that the plates aren't all spinning anymore. And by the end of it, I was just like, all right,
it's a pretty steady stream of, like, low impact charm, but then you think about it for 2 seconds and you're like, no, nothing is actually going on here. And then the way they tie it up and with like narration and like, she didn't know the rest of her life would be so great.
So strange.
Nor did I. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. She carries it all on her back. All
right, fair
that's
enough.
I just like watching her do things. I like watching her make cool faces and look cool and glide through minor level problems.
Yes. Yeah. No, somebody was saying though that like the charm of her is Kyle Buchanan, who we both know, actually said this. I agree with him that her face is so under emotive so much of the time that when she does reveal something, that's what like the thrill is. Like, oh, now she's saucy she holds it back. I think until she's ready to like prove that she is super powerful.
And that's a valuable strategy. Mm-hmm. Dave, you also watched The Big Short.
Yes.
White people. Oh, thank you so much.
It was in gibberish.
Hey, Adepero Oduye is in that movie.
That's true. I love her.
It was filmed in the language of gibberish.
Yeah, this is the movie that was meant to explain the market crash to regular folks, but not regular folks like Dave.
Look,
White.
I've seen the documentary Inside Job. I didn't understand that either. I understand.
Come on, that movie had animated graphs.
Here's what I understand. Greedy, bad, horrible, despicable human beings did one bad thing. Other greedy, horrible, despicable human beings made money off of it, even as they told the world, hey, bad people are doing a bad thing. Oh, no one's listening? I guess I need to make a ton of money off this. Oops, I just said a swear. I just said a swear in the clean podcast, which I never do. It's essentially, and I hate...
I just saw your text, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I hate going there, this is basically like, oh, Hitler's going to kill a bunch of people. Hitler's going to kill a bunch of people. No one's listening. Oh, look, now Hitler's killing a bunch of people. But look at all the art the dead people left behind. Yeah. I get to have it. Woman in gold. It's mine. And so that's really how I feel about the characters in this film.
I'm not versed enough in the stock market to explain to you why you're wrong. And I would love it if someone would write into linoleumpodcast@gmail.com to explain to you why the people that The Big Short is about are not the villains of this. They just saw a situation.
They're disgusting. They are morally wrong for profiting off of someone else's worse crime.
Well, I think the movie at least throws in the scene of Brad Pitt telling the two guys not to dance.
Yeah.
Because if they're right, it does mean disaster. But look, I think ultimately it boils down to this. You know, you bet on green, or you bet on black, or you bet on red.
Or don't bet. Walk away and go to the New York Times and yell at them until they tell the world.
Okay, but you saw the scene where they go to the guy at the Wall Street Journal
and he refused to, yes. Then go somewhere else.
The whole system was rigged, like the, you know, Standard
& Poor's wouldn't,
like it was.
I'm
just saying, it's not like these people fiddled while Rome burned. They genuinely try to like warn the people who could have chained something, and none of those people would do it.
As a film? I found myself checking my phone.
I was sitting
on the couch.
You scold me about that kind of thing, and you were doing it.
Well, I scold you because you do it a lot. But like, I was sitting on the couch, and I was thinking, yeah, you know what's going on with that picture of corn casserole that I posted on Instagram? who's enjoying that properly right now? I fully enjoyed Margot Robbie
In a bathtub. I would hope so.
Selena Gomez and Anthony Bourdain.
Yes. Those are the highlights.
Those were my three favorite moments because I'm stupid.
Did you like a stunt?
Their explanations work for you?
No.
Oh, damn.
No. No. I just thought, well, this is... I see what you're talking about, Selena Gomez.
Did this movie not...
I would rather see her... I would rather see her sing that... If you're ready, come and get it song. That's, you know.
Oh, that's a good song.
That's a really good song.
She was also really good in Band Slam.
I was going to say about this movie, isn't it like a bizarre like collection of everybody who pisses you off? This movie's a bizarre collection of everybody who pisses you off by growing a beard. Like, it's Christian Bale, it's Ryan Gosling, it's Steve Carell. It's
Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, yeah,
right. I was thinking that, you know, that if we had to endure Crazy Stupid Love to get Carell and Gosling together in this, then it was worth it.
I have a friend who literally calls that the most underrated movie he's ever seen, and it's like a hurdle with me. Like, I have to think about that constantly.
I still remember how Entertainment Weekly, before that movie came out, could not stop talking about it. How excited they were and how great it was and how it was going to be the movie of the year and yada, yada, yada. And then I saw it, I thought, you people are insane.
I was like, everybody's dumb. Everyone's dumb.
All right. Worst of 2015. Never a hard list to make. If anything, it's a hard one to keep short enough. Mine ran on the wrap. So, but let's start with you, Lewis. What do you got?
Okay, should I just go through a bunch of titles? They're kind of unranked because it's I'm somebody who compulsively ranks everything, like every good film critic, as we'll soon discover. I'm looking at this list. Okay, I have Prestige bad, and then I have regular bad.
Oh, okay, that's actually the variety did it that way. Let's start with your Prestige.
Okay, Prestige bad. All right, I am so sorry, By the Sea. Here's the problem. When I saw this movie. Like, look, in theory, I want to love a 3-hour De Beers commercial, okay? Yeah. Genetically, I believe I'm prone to enjoy that sort of thing. But it's like, the movie is a year long, and then it's an 11-page script. And and I believe on entire pages, it just says, in brackets, Langor. They look good, but it's just like, I mean, even their, first of all, when you realize what their names are in the movie, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, as they go, the movie is they're in Italy and their marriage is on the rocks, and then you look at rocks for a while. Their names are Roland and Vanessa, so if you're not already infuriated.
Oh, I didn't even notice that before. Yeah.
There's a 5-minute stretch where the movie is like Rear Window and they can't stop looking at other people. That's good. Then the rest of the movie happens.
Can we spoil this movie now? I mean, is it old enough that we can we could talk about the big?
I still haven't seen it.
Oh God! Okay, the big character revelation is so,
of course,
atrocious and horrifying for any woman filmmaker to do in the 21st century, I think, but especially this one in particular, given her own life. But it. You know, what I said in when I reviewed it was like, it's like the whole point of why we should be advocating for more women writers and directors is that they can tell stories about women that don't fall under this sort of limited umbrella of lady problems
right.
that movies have given us up till now. And this movie is holding that umbrella.
Right, it doesn't know what to do but resort to those. You're right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What else?
Yes, let's see. I thought the Danish girl was unbelievably terrible.
Oh, I actually kind of like
this is
it.
It's too bad.
And I still haven't seen that
okay,
one either.
Well, of
mostly
course,
because I keep hearing about stuff from folks like you, and I'm like, they're right, probably.
Right. I just think Eddie Redmayne.
I never trust Alonzo's opinion.
I see. Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I just think there's good LGBT prestige this year. Like, I thought Carol was unbelievably amazing. Sure, I went in thinking it was going to be good, and then it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
This I went in thinking would be, like, tolerable in an Imitation Game way, not that I loved that. Mm. And it ended up being Eddie Redmayne, like, looking over his shoulder and, like, smiling for, like, 3 hours. I thought his performance was straight up bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, not representative of who that person would have been during that time. And I thought Alicia Vikander is good, but in the same way, too contemporary, too Jennifer Lawrence and her, like, shruggy can hang attitude. I didn't think it felt like early 20th century.
All I want
are women characters who seem like rad early. Like, I think all movies should be about the chicken suffragette who runs in front of the horse. That's all I want.
I think I went in with super low expectations because I hated Les Miserables so much.
Oh, right. Is that because you're a human being? Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. So, you know, so I just thought, oh, God, not again with the Tom Hooper. I can't. I am literally unable to can. And then I found myself kind of into it. And I mean, on the one hand, I think it is super tame, but I'm all for super tame movies about difficult subject matter that are going to maybe set grandma in the right direction of thinking about things in a certain way. So, and that's not about art. That's about politics. That's something else entirely. I totally grant that. But ultimately, I felt like I was into those two performances. I believed in those two people. And it didn't... It was prestige without being mothballs for me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you just found it sort of suffocatingly, you know...
I thought it was them arguing and Eddie Redmayne storming out of rooms while looking over his shoulder to smile. That's all I saw.
Fair enough. What else?
Let's see here. Okay, we're back to normal bad. Let's see. Hot Pursuit was infuriating. Here's the thing. Reese Witherspoon, I am always waiting for her to return to her like freeway days when she was like a rascal.
Yep. Yes.
And like surprising and like cool and really funny.
Sure,
and
election.
In this movie, It's we've been waiting for this for so long. She comes back with a comic performance, but it's like the palest shadow of that. You know, it's like you've seen her do it before and 100 times better. And Sofia Vergara is so callously cast. This movie feels like it took 2 phone calls to make. You know what I mean? Like Reese Witherspoon wants like a kooky movie and like, oh, Sofia Vergara's kooky, then it's going to be good. It's not good.
It's bad.
Ben Mankiewicz said that it's like, we have this amazing cast, but you have to make this movie tomorrow.
Right. And the thing is, I'm rooting for that director.
In real time.
That director, Anne Fletcher, yeah. Right? Like, okay, I thought The Guilt Trip was pretty good. And I like her whole, like, we're going to give you, like, the blockbuster woman movie that's going to, like, you know, they're going to be tenacious and you're going to like them in the way you like your aunt or whatever. Mm-hmm. But just, this was so lame.
And she did Proposal, too, right?
Yes, right.
Which is okay.
Yeah, not bad. Mm-hmm.
All right, go on.
Okay, let's see. Pan was like,
okay.
No, I don't even really remember this movie all that well, so I had to rent it again for this. And it's literally like, is your problem with Hook it wasn't joyless enough? Or it didn't have enough sidewalk chalk colors in it? I would compare it actually to Speed Racer, and that the trailer looks like a Technicolor amazing fantasy, and the movie is a slog, the worst.
Yeah, no, Pan is, I think my number 2 on my list of worst, but it was probably the one that I let out the most exhalations during.
Yeah, right.
That was unbearable.
And it makes you mad when there are things that look cool in that movie, like when he's flying onto the ship and stuff. I just thought that looked realistic in a, like, the guy tumbling on the Titanic sort of way.
Sure, but even some of the cool stuff was like, oh, I loved it when Terry Gilliam did that shot in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Right,
you know.
Right. Okay, just a couple more. Ted 2, I mean, can you believe it wasn't good?
Ted 1 didn't suck, but...
Right. Hot Tub Time Machine 2. Did you see that movie?
Yeah. One
of the worst homophobic scenes of the year, where Adam Scott is called up on stage to have sex with another guy, and can you believe it?
Yeah.
I can. And then the worst movie I saw this year was Get Hard.
Absolutely. That was my number one as well.
I'm still infuriated because there was a Salon review by that guy, Andrew O'Hare.
O'Hare,
he's like, it's lazy to call this movie homophobic and racist. I recommend to him watching it with a gay person in a theater and watch all the people around you who know you're gay cringing at you.
On your behalf.
Yes. So it's just a horrifying movie, and I'm horrified to have seen it.
Yeah, no, and a movie that I would have been happy to cut the tiniest bit of slack had it been the tiniest bit funny.
Right, yet never funny.
Never, not in the slightest. And let me dig up my list real quick.
Here's my favorite, most enjoyable bad one. The Boy Next Door.
It had moments.
Yeah.
But I don't even think you thought that was bad, though. You were genuinely entertained by that.
Right, it's garbage.
Okay.
The climactic scene in particular is like super garbage.
It's garbage, and that's... It's my favorite bat movie.
I see. Okay.
Sympathetic
to that.
Here's what's just awful.
Mine for that would be Jupiter Ascending.
That movie has its fans who annoy me, but I understand where you're coming from.
I had a blast, and it was ridiculous.
Okay, well, Get Hard is the single worst thing. And I'll repeat what I said when we were talking about it the first time around, mm-hmm. when you were here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't have any feelings left to be offended.
Right.
Right.
You can't offend me anymore. You're not hurting my feelings. You're just a frigging idiot.
Yeah.
And you need to sit down and shut up and rethink your approach to comedy, because you're stupid if you think this is where you should be going.
Yeah, it's like I'm not offended as much as just shocked that you...
Shocked at how dumb you are.
Yeah,
that
you think that Partners is cutting-edge comedy.
It's embarrassing.
You know?
I'm embarrassed for the people who made this film.
Yes, exactly. Rock the Casbah made my list.
Oh, I did not see that, but people did not like it.
It was painful. And then when I found out later that it was a remake of it was based on a documentary that was about the young woman and not about the old fart who discovers the young woman, it was even more annoying.
LOL. Tragic. That's horrible.
The Cobbler.
Oh, which I still haven't seen.
The other Tom McCarthy
movie. Still sitting on near the TV.
Oh, man. I might endure that again just to watch it with you, Dave White. Adam Sandler... This could be quite possibly more irritatingly stupid than his like fart movies. And it's trying to be art. Entourage, never watched the show, and now I never will.
I will say this, I had never watched the show either and saw the movie. It was almost like I understood why people would like them as a douchey camaraderie thing, but like, man, the movie's bad.
Oh, terrible.
One of the great pleasures of my life in 2015.
Was quitting your job.
Was quitting my job at movies.com. And then the next great pleasure was that Entourage was the very next film I was scheduled to review.
And you did cartwheels instead.
And I didn't go. I just stayed home.
That's like when I got fired from the Dallas Times Herald on the day of that I was supposed to go review the Bon Jovi concert that night.
You're like,
and they were like,
"Yay,
they
I
were
got
like,
fired!"
They were like, "Do you still want to go?" Like, no.
I intended as far back as... When was it now? February?
Something like that,
to quit at the end of May. Mm-hmm. Like, we had the big powwow about it, and I was like, I have to get out of here. And you were like, I support you in all of your decisions. And I was like, okay, I'm going to stay through May. And then whatever happens in June, I guess I just won't review it for them. Maybe I'll review it for us. And I thought, I'm going to be really conscientious about reviewing that for us, whatever's coming next. And then I saw that it was Entourage, and I was like, no, I'm not. No,
you ran into traffic instead.
That's right.
Pixels... More Adam Sandler. Where the movie where if you save the world, you get to have sex with Martha Stewart and Serena Williams, and Martha Stewart will make you a sandwich.
Right.
Can I just say something? Before Chris Farley died, one of the things that I was shocked to learn was that he was so upset that critics hated Tommy Boy, or Black Sheep, or one of the two, and like it led to like the downward spiral that was his life. Adam Sandler, can you have like 1% of that?
The tiniest iota of shame.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four, I know that's been an easy whipping boy this year, but oh my God.
There's no excuse for a movie like that to be bad. You know what I mean? When you have put that much money and fan effort into it.
Yeah, and again, a comic book that has endured, that's a lot of fun and has a lot of interesting character dynamics in it that somehow no one can put on screen. Strange Magic...
Oh, but the Woody Allen movie?
No, the George Lucas cartoon.
Yeah. Oh, right.
The poison pill of the Star Wars deal that Disney had to release this thing.
Yes. Abominable.
Wow. Like more jukebox crammed than Moulin Rouge was, but to far less effect.
Oh.
And just ugly to look at and shrill and irritating.
By the way, that reminds me of the part in Pan where they sing Smells Like Teen Spirit, which, by the way, I thought was terrible in Moulin Rouge. And also, it's like we've been riding this, like, oh, isn't it ironic that we've heard of a song from 25 years ago?
Yeah.
It's like,
and Blitzkrieg Bop. Like, I don't... Give me a shred of explanation of what that has to do with what else you're doing here. I don't know what it is. Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, because, come on.
I thought Laurence Olivier was wonderful in that.
that movie was like if a fart...
gained
assumed
sentience?
Assumed human form.
And directed a movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you see Aloha?
I did. Oh, I should have put that here. I feel bad about that.
I went to the screening where Cameron Crowe actually came out beforehand and sort of apologized.
Wow.
Well, no, he didn't.
No,
he basically
told us to ignore the Amy Pascal emails and to take the movie
as
the love letter to Hawaii.
Love letter to Hawaii.
Can I say about that movie, the weird thing for me is, like, if the Emma Stone character were an Asian actress, you might have actually cared about the conflict in the movie some more, where she's, like, trying to protect... It's like, I don't believe you. You look like you're in a Wheat Thins commercial.
And then when they do try to, like, resolve the plot, it's in this way that makes no sense whatsoever. There's an entire sequence where buttons are being pushed and people are yelling into microphones. You're like, what's even happening now? I don't even know. And then Pan and Get Hard. And then my runners-up included... Black Cat. I know people are still trying to convince me that this is a work of genius by the great Michael Mann.
It's too effing long.
Oh, God. It's so many wrong, stupid ideas in this movie. You know, miscast, badly written. Viola Davis comes in to rescue things for a moment, and then she's off again.
Thank you, Roxanne Murder.
Yes, exactly. Chappie.
I didn't see it.
Chappie Book, which is basically Neil Blomkamp making the same movie for the third time and really, you know, getting the grim and gritty short circuit all wrong. Do You Believe? Christian movie with an actual all-star cast, including former Best Supporting Actress winner Mira Sorvino.
She is
talented. It upsets me.
It's a placeholder for God's Not Dead 2, which is coming this year.
Coming soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Poltergeist remake.
Oh, my. Man. Yeah.
Just pointless and even
boring.
In their attempts to sort of switch things up, it was none of the choices were better than the first go around. Ricky and the Flash.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to the writer. I wish I liked it.
Oh,
yeah.
That movie has its partisans, but it just... clangingly wrong so frequently.
I think the weirdest part is, what is Kevin Kline even doing in the movie? You know, it's like he doesn't have anything to do.
No, and it's that kind of, you know, we talked before about movies where you can't tell if they're condescending to the character or not. Like, this one, it just constantly seemed to be, like, the kid couldn't decide between, isn't she awful and isn't she a delight?
Right. Yeah, you know? And also, whenever she is awful, it doesn't feel awful enough to... It's, like, not interestingly awful.
No.
Yeah.
And then the big ending, which is supposed to be her doing this generous, or, you know, this loving thing, is basically also her becoming, making herself the center of attention at somebody else's function again.
Right, yeah.
You know?
With a boring song.
I saw flashes of what I really like about Diablo Cody and Jonathan Demme and Meryl Streep in that film. And then I felt like, I don't know what else is happening. I don't know why this is happening this. Because these are three people that are really talented whose work I really like. And I don't know what's going on. And I want to know whose fault it is.
It almost feels like they course corrected the script or something. Because, like, where it ends up is so boring.
And also in a way that just doesn't even... It doesn't scan, you know.
I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I did like whichever Gummer was in it. She was interesting.
That was Mamie Gummer.
Yes. You know, when Charlotte Ray and Rick Springfield,
or I could be wrong,
walk off with the film, you know. let's see. We have to talk about Stonewall. Which I didn't put it in my worst 10 because so many of these movies are made for greed or laziness or pandering. I will give Roland Emmerich enough credit to be like, you know what? Nobody was begging for this movie. You bankrolled it by yourself. You made it for reasons that had to do with, like, wanting to tell this story. But that does not excuse the results. Right. You know?
Here's what I love. And this is all a fantasy in my head. But I know it happened.
Okay.
Roland Emmerich went to some LGBT history exhibition.
Heard about it for the first time.
As though he were the only one that ever found out about it. And said, someone has to tell this story. No one else has ever made a film about this sort of thing or any other homosexual experience. I don't know what an outfest is, and I'm going to make that movie.
We gave him an award once,
Thank
actually.
You. You're welcome from me, Roland Emmerich, your homosexual brother.
I guess I heard a lot of people defend like this movie in theory, kind of the way you just did, but like it took more of a tone of like, this is an important movie that like a young gay person's going to see this. And it's like, well, that, for them, it's great. It's like, you know what? When I was 8 years old, I thought the best female heroine I'd ever seen was Cammy in Street Fighter, played by Kylie Minogue. We don't defend that movie now, even though it was important to me.
Well, and I think, you know, 25 years ago, you could have gotten away with this movie because of the complete lack of other queer presence right. in the mass media. But you can now. It's a lot more competitive.
Did y'all really give him an award at Outfest?
Years ago, yeah.
For what? What had he done?
The Legacy Award. It's,
oh,
it's
the Just Gay Enough Award to Roland Emmerich. Anyway,
and he's been very supportive of the organization.
Oh, has he?
Yes, I will say that for
okay,
him.
Okay, well.
But anyway, yeah, that movie. Oof. Taken 3 was this year. I had to look. Wow. It came out in January of 2015. Oh, my God. Such a shaved up bit of like all the action sequences were just pixels. I mean, I don't even know what the hell was going on. They were cut so badly and confusingly. And it was, you know, it was just a disaster. So, yeah, I mean, as far as like, you know, I mean, like the first Taken was stupid, but at least it was exciting. And, you know, like there were things.
Yeah, it's memorable. People talk
about
it. Yeah,
exactly. But oh man,
one of the happiest xenophobic films I've ever seen.
Yeah. So upbeat. Yeah, but Taken 3 was just the worst. And Victor Frankenstein.
Vicky Franks. Right.
What was going on? That was just I sat there with slack jaw going,
But Max Landis is so endearing as a person. How could this be?
Well, Dave's a big defender of American Ultra, but I'm not having
it. Had
it
had moments. I didn't like it, but it had moments.
I am.
And I didn't put it on my list, but I love the fact that the movie that I've been seeing on best lists and worst lists, and definitely it goes on worst for me, is Me and Earl and the Dying Girl.
Okay, I think there was like an intense reaction to that winning at Sundance. I'm not going to say it was good, but I'm going to give it like a 55% on Metacritic.
I didn't
45%.
I didn't even bear in mind that it was an award winner. I just it wasn't the award as much as that was a movie that people were coming out of it saying it's like, oh my God, it was so moving, and then I cried, and then I went, of course, and I'm a sucker for that sort of thing, you know. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh my God, they should all be dying and right now, because ugh. You know, I did like how they shot Pittsburgh. That's all I will give that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I agree with both of you about most everything. Okay. And I will add to that. You know what? I might have to lean toward you on Black Hat because I haven't felt urgent about going and watching it again mm-hmm. to see if I've changed my mind.
Uh-huh.
So maybe you're right. Who knows? Here's what I'll add. True Story.
Ugh. Yeah. Did you see that one?
No.
That was the James Franco, right. Jonah Hill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. The previews were hilarious. Yeah.
Sinister 2.
I didn't see it.
Hitman Agent 47.
Ugh.
Vacation.
Oh, my God. I forgot all about
that. That was Matt Atchity's pick for Worst of the Year. I did like the Christina Applegate sorority scene, but mm-hmm. other than that, meh.
Pitch Perfect 2, with the exception of Rebel Wilson singing We Belong.
I do think actually the problem with that movie is the direction. I want to like Elizabeth Banks. Yep. It's really badly directed.
I'm an Elizabeth Banks fan. Mm-hmm. It's a rotten movie.
Mm-hmm. I was entertained enough.
Whatever insurgent movie, or divergent movie came out this year.
Contorbagent or whatever. They're out now.
Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
That was deadly.
Captive.
Didn't see it, but I remember you talking about that. That was the Christian-y movie with David Oyelowo and one of the Maras.
Kate Mara.
Kate Mara.
Yeah. 90 Minutes in Heaven and War Room are technically bad films, but they are effective at doing what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And neither of them were hateful. And so I feel like even though they are not good films and they are among the worst, they're also, for their genre, representative of some emerging competency. And
so they were better than Do You Believe?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Transporter Refueled.
Didn't see it.
The Water Diviner.
Which I didn't see, but you definitely talked me out of it.
Armenian Genocide? What Armenian Never Genocide?
Heard of it. Oh, good.
Me don't know nothing about no Armenian Genocide.
This is the Russell Crowe directed movie.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Human Centipede 3.
Full sequence.
Will I not understand it if I haven't seen Human Centipede 2?
You will never want to see Human Centipede 2 if you watch 3 first. And The Overnight.
Ugh. God, that movie got on my nerves. That was another one that people at Sundance were like, oh, it's so daring. So da-da-da. Both The Overnight and The D-Train.
Infuriating.
We're so taken in by their own sense of like...
The D-Train actually has a weird sort of Chuck and Buck quality to it that I half appreciate.
I saw that movie. I completely forgot about it. Wait, that's the one with Jack Black, right?
Yeah.
The D-Train was better than The Overnight. The Overnight was so like proud of its sort of polymorphous perversity in the tamest way until it had to actually deliver on it. And it was just so patting itself on the back. And so many audiences, straight people audiences, bought into that movie as being, like, rebellious or daring. Nothing.
I'm getting up from the table for a minute. I have to take meatballs out of the refrigerator.
Oh, okay. That is important stuff.
I do remember thinking the D-Train had a... Okay, there's, like, a turn early in the movie that's like, whoa, are you sure, movie? This is what you did? And then as it went on, it was mostly like piling on how horrible Jack Black had become, at which point you get it. I don't know.
It definitely got to be a bit of overkill. But the first part where Jack Black like goes to L.A. to pursue...
James Marsden,
I thought was very smart, and had a lot of funny stuff in it. I love the Dermot Mulroney cameo.
Oh, that's the best part. Oh, his response to them, it's like, Dermot, dark. Yeah.
plenty of not good movies this year, but good ones too, and we'll talk about that next week when we go over the best.
We'll skip letters this week because we've gone... a long time.
Okay. Well, we'll get caught up. Some people have been sending us their lists of the year, so we'll...
We'll kick out all the letters. Well, no, we won't, because next week is best of with more guests. Yes. So, sorry, your letters are going to wait a little while, but we'll get to it.
There's only one new movie next week that we're going to see, so, you know. And it's a January horror movie, so you know it's going to be great. Anyway, all right. Well, Lewis, always a pleasure to have you here.
I love being here. You guys are my two favorite film critics, and that's not a lie.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you. If you are not following Lewis on Twitter, you're dumb, and you are missing out on the master of the 140 characters. So, at Lewis Vertel, LouisVirtel, and you can catch up with his great video segments at hitfix.com.
Thank you so much. Elegantly done. Thank you.
Thank you. I 5 years of this show. I'm getting my patter down. As always, check out our friends on the internet. We want to thank Blue, as always, for our lovely theme music. You can find out more about what he's up to at blutopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. Go check out ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the Rotten Tomatoes podcast with Gray and Matt, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Schmoes Know, Sewers of Paris, the Joel Ryan thing, the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting SVU, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to the show for free at iTunes. And while you're there, please...
Free, always free. It will always be free. No, make no mistakes. It is free, will always be free.
Yes. When we go to subscription, LKTV...
There's been some confusion about that lately.
LKTV will become a thing that only subscribers get, but this program, this original Linoleum Knife podcast of the cinema, always, always will be free. Leave us a nice review at iTunes. It does help people find the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on a handy app on our Facebook page, which you should go like, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Join the Linoleum Knife group page to talk to other listeners to the show about movies and all kinds of other stuff. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. I've been remiss in posting new episodes up there or new old episodes, but I will get to that. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LinoleumCast, and of course drop us a line. We will be getting to your letters at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Eventually.
We promise. And again, Lewis, thanks for being here. It's always a treat. And we will catch you guys next week.
Goodbye.